4.6 billion.
The Earth forms.
Cambrian.
542 million.
Complex life explodes.
Permian Triassic.
251 million.
90% of species die.
Cretaceous Tertiary.
65 million.
Meteor kills the dinosaurs.
55 million.
Primates appear.
2.3 million.
Pleistocene.
200,000.
Humans.
20,000.
Agricultural
250.
Revolution. Industrial Revolution.
60.
Great acceleration.
The Anthropocene.
Welcome to Generation Anthropocene, where we tell stories of people, the planet, and people on the planet. I'm Leslie Chang. Today on the show, we're going to learn about an animal that you've probably never heard of. It's called the Solenodon. It's this funky little mammal that kind of looks like a mole or a mouse or a furry hedgehog. It has a long tapered nose and tiny eyes. It's weirdly cute. The Solenodon is about the size of a rabbit, and they're only found on a few islands in the Caribbean. This tiny mammal has been around since the age of the dinosaurs. 66 million years ago, it survived the mass extinction event. While the dinosaurs were croaking, the Solenodon hunkered down. But sadly, this amazing survivor is now endangered. Today's story is brought to us by Laura Cusson, who traveled to the Dominican Republic a few years ago to research and report on the Solenodon. She first published this story back in 2014 with support from the Stanford Storytelling Project and a Braden Storytelling Grant. Here's Laura and the story of the Solenodon.
This is the story of an animal that lives in the forests of the Dominican Republic. The ground here is like petrified Swiss cheese, and underground tunnels stretch in every direction. Our animal sleeps in that underworld. In English, it's called the Solenodon. In Spanish, Solenodonte.
The first time that I caught a Solenodon, I remember that we were fishing in the river at night.
That's Nicolas Corona, a hunter with a thick mustache who lives near the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. When this story happened, he was 9 years old.
And then when the Solenodon was next to the road, I remember my uncle saying, "A red mouse, a red mouse." And we didn't know that it was a Solenodon. He hit it in the neck, and my uncle brought it home. He said, "Last night I killed a red mouse."
The Solenodon is the size of a rabbit, and I'll be honest with you, it looks pretty strange. It has tiny eyes and a crazy long nose. Nicolas didn't know what it was when his uncle killed it. This is actually a common story. In Santo Domingo, the capital of the Dominican Republic, estimates say that 1 in 10 people have ever heard of the animal. Some people call the animal exotic, and it is a pretty interesting animal. Even though it's a mammal, it can inject venom through its teeth, enough to kill a dog. But it doesn't really fit the definition of exotic, because it's been around on the island much longer than any human.
Es un animal extraordinario.
Local biologist Pedro Martinez is right to say it's an extraordinary animal, and not just because it looks funny and is venomous.
Lo comparan con una rata grande.
People compare it to a big rat or a mongoose, but really it looks more like a shrew, only bigger.
Una musaraña,
and it actually is related to shrews.
Y de hecho está emparentado con las musarañas.
As Pedro points out, the Solenodon's closest cousins are the shrew, the mole, and the hedgehog. And if we compare the Solenodon's DNA with the DNA of a shrew, we can find out how different they are at a molecular level. Then we can figure out how long it's been since they were the same species. When scientists performed this calculation, they were stupefied. Its lineage split off from shrews 76 million years ago. At that point, the strawberry blonde beast was roaming the Earth with the dinosaurs. And then, when a miles-wide space rock flew into the Earth and killed nearly everything on the planet, the Solenodon lived to tell the tale. It might have looked a little different, but based on its genome, it was there. That's why they're an evolutionary biologist's fantasy.
It's a survivor.
Alexis Mikhailo, Stanford graduate student.
It survived the KT impact.
That's the one that took out the dinosaurs.
It survived humans arriving in several different waves. Up until now, it survived invasive predators like cats and dogs. Before humans arrived, there were over 20 species of land mammals, and now there are only 2.
Science is only beginning to find out how such an awkward creature can be the ultimate survivor. It's hard to get data on an animal that's so hard to find. But sometimes animals find scientists rather than the other way around. To meet our scientist, we are in a mountain town in the Dominican Republic, far from the resort beaches. Cesar is a Peruvian biologist who has become the town wildlife healer. One afternoon 2 years ago, a park ranger knocked on his door.
Era la tarde.
It was afternoon, and I was already home, watching a bit of TV and relaxing. They knocked on my door, and there was one of the park rangers, and he tells me, I've brought you a little present.
It's usually a bird with broken bones, or an animal lost in a hurricane. This time the animal looks different. It's bigger.
I said, well, what could it be? And I saw the ranger was holding a sack, right? A sack that's bulging a little bit at the bottom. Well, let's take a look at my present. The first thing I imagined was, it's a big snake. Then I opened the sack and took a look.
Cesar was looking for something scaly and smooth.
So I suddenly saw a mass of hair in there, curled up. I looked at it carefully, and it was a solenodon. That was the first time I had seen a solenodon so close up, and for me, it's beautiful. It's a rarity of nature.
Cesar was delighted with his new roommate, but he had a lot of work to do. The animal was wounded.
It was incredible because the first night I didn't know what to feed him. I said, so now what do I feed my muchacho so that he can get better?
That day, Cesar got some cans full of worms.
The hour of the experiment had come. We're going to let some worms go to see if he likes them. So we give him a few worms, and he launched himself at them right there, and he ate them up with such appetite. You would hear, and he'd eat one. He'd eat another like spaghetti. He was so excited that I said, wow, that must be really good. I was tempted to eat worms. With that, I tell you everything. It was incredible.
Even though the solenodon was venomous, and Cesar was a little afraid at first, they were really bonding. Human and solenodon were getting to know each other, bit by bit.
By the second day, he would scurry over me. He ate next to me. Well, it was almost as though we started to coexist. We got along well. We were good friends.
Soon enough, the solenodon's bruised leg was better.
The third night, he was ready. So that day, we decided to set him free again. We went to a biological preserve and, well, we let him go so that he could go back to his house.
Cesar's hope is that the solenodon will go back to its den and continue life as usual. But even though it's right next to protected areas, the town of Puerto Escondido isn't a walk in the park for a solenodon to survive in.
There's an avocado plantation here, and they sometimes have cat traps there, and unfortunately, solenodons fall in those little traps.
Why cat traps are necessary in an avocado plantation is beyond me. But this is a small example of a very big problem for the solenodon. The ultimate survivor is endangered. Humans, their dogs, and habitat encroachment pose a significant threat to the solenodon. People burn native forests to make coal, even in national parks. I talk to people who have solenodons living on their property, but they've never seen one. The reason it isn't part of Dominican culture is that the indigenous Taíno people are long gone. Many Taíno died in wars against the Spaniards, or from disease. Some integrated into the richly multiracial population of the Dominican Republic. But their environmental folklore has all but disappeared, so stories about the solenodon aren't being passed down. Part of why it's going extinct might be because its story is going extinct. Nobody talks about it. But it doesn't have to be that way. Let's return to the story of Nicolás, the man with the mustache who caught a solenodon when he was a boy.
I was hunting inside the protected area, hunting doves. I had 9 or 10 in my hand that I had already hunted.
Nicolás was 16, deep in a Dominican forest.
Suddenly a group of people appeared and I was surprised.
Nicolás didn't expect much empathy. He was in a protected area.
So they started asking me questions, and I answered them.
He was scared. One of the men, a cameraman, approached him.
He said to me, "You shoot a bird and take away her life, and she is dead forever. I shoot her with my camera, and she stays alive."
The cameraman's words changed something in Nicolás.
I was very moved by that moment. They gave me some binoculars, and so the next day I went out to study birds, and I was moved. I realized that by observing birds and studying them, I contributed more than by destroying them. I never hunted endemic birds again. From one day to the next, I immediately stopped hunting.
These days, his main source of income is conservation of native wildlife.
After I found out that out of 25 mammals that were here in Hispaniola, We now only have two. I said, no, we have to protect them. And I realized the importance of conservation, and so far I don't regret dedicating my life to conservation.
Nicolas never went to college, but his early years in the forest and the decades he has spent with conservation scientists in the field have taught him more than a degree ever could about the solenodon's behavior.
I don't think anybody in the Dominican Republic has the vast practical knowledge I have about the solenodon. I know how they live, how they move, where you can see one, how much they can walk at night, how many square meters they can walk. I know when they are lactating when I catch them. When a female is pregnant, I naturally know which insects the solenodon eats and all these things. I have a vast knowledge of that species.
So I asked him whether he knew the answer to the solenodon's deepest secret. Why has the solenodon been able to survive for so much time? He thinks he has an idea. In February 2013, the solenodon did something very strange.
We went out one time to look for a solenodon. We looked for them, and then when we walked into the forest at 8 that night, I didn't see a single active solenodon. They weren't active in a place where you can usually see 20 or 30 solenodons, and we didn't see a single one. I looked until 2 in the morning, and I couldn't find them. And so I started asking myself, why aren't they here?
The solenodons refused to come out of their caves, even though they needed to forage for food. Nicolas was frustrated. For all his experience, he couldn't even explain what was going on.
The next night I went earlier, and I started looking for them, and they didn't come out of their caves. They didn't come out. That was the day the meteorites fell in Russia.
Nicolas is talking about meteorites half a world away. The Chelyabinsk meteor fell in Russia this past February. Nobody knew it was coming, and several hundred people were injured. It was a stunning sight on our TV screens, a fireball brighter than the sun, exploding in midair and shattering windows.
I think the solenodon survived because it kept itself in caves that are 7 to 8 meters deep. So, for example, a climatological phenomenon wouldn't affect it. And they last a very long time without leaving their caves. They're scared to come out.
What Nicolas saw might explain why the solenodon outlived the dinosaurs in the KT asteroid impact. When a meteor falls from the sky, they hide in their tunnels, far below the surface.
So when the farmer cuts down trees and burns them, the solenodon doesn't die, because it is in a very deep tunnel. And I think that one of the reasons the solenodon lived so many years, and is still living, is because of its habitat, the house it lives in and the way it lives.
Going underground is a solenodon's strategy for surviving, but you can only stay underground for so long. Eventually, it has to come up and eat. And if above ground the forest is gone, so is the solenodon's food. By deforesting, people are unknowingly pushing the animal towards extinction. But what if that's because they don't know this animal exists in the first place? Nicolas is providing scientists with anecdotes that they can test to understand the survivor. But he's doing something else, too. He's creating a story.
It seems that they know when a natural phenomenon is about to happen.
Not only is Nicolas saying that solenodons know how to survive a natural disaster after it hits, he thinks the solenodons knew the meteorites were coming ahead of time, when no scientist could. And he's spreading his story. Everybody in the border town of Pedernales knows Nicolas. They respect him, and they know how much he has to say about his crazy animals. He answers people's questions, and now, when kids ask why the solenodon is still around, if it lived with the dinosaurs, he tells them his story. But his answer to the solenodon's continued survival isn't really an answer. It's a question. How can the solenodon know about natural events ahead of time? This is outside the realm of science. But what is interesting is that Nicolas has managed to turn the solenodon into a mythological creature. Now, being part of folklore isn't always a positive thing for a species conservation. Some animals are associated so much with myth that they are hunted for use in traditional medicine. I wonder how the survival stories Nicolas weaves are going to impact the solenodon. My hope is that the stories are going to help the solenodon form part of local culture again. He's turning the solenodon into a quirky anecdote to tell local farmers over a steaming cup of canelilla, swinging in their rocking chairs at mid-afternoon. Now Nicolas is the solenodon's public relations officer, and he's spreading the word in a digestible way. This story might just allow Dominicans, and the world, to take notice of the animal at last, to thirst for more information about it, and ultimately, to help it amble on its ancient, unwavering path to survival, its long nose digging for grub, and its tiny ears listening for the smallest sign of danger.
de ti enamorado, prisionero y esclavo. Quisiera ser tu dueño, quisiera ser tu amo.
That was guest producer Laura Cusson. This piece was made possible by the support of Bruce Braden and the Stanford Storytelling Project, with guidance from Natasha Ruck and Will Rogers. Laura would also like to give special thanks to Cesar Abril, Nicolas Corona, and Professor Elizabeth Hadley. If you want to learn more about Professor Hadley's work, we've actually featured her before on Gen Anthro. Check out our episode titled Early Humans and Megafauna. Generation Anthropocene is Miles Traer, Mike Osborne, and me, Leslie Chang. Our intern is Isha Salian.
Yeah, that's me.
Our theme music is by Maserati. Big shout out this week to Tom Hayden. This episode was recorded at KZSU Stanford 90.1. Our website is genanthro.com, and you can find us on Twitter at genanthropocene. Thanks for listening. Quisiera ser tu dueño, quisiera ser tu amo. He dicho tantas veces y vuelvo a repetirlo. Si no puedo ser tu amor, yo no quiero ser tu amigo.